Hello, this is Trey Hawk for ScenStealers.com, and I have Paul Lazarus on the phone with me right now, and we're getting ready to talk about his new film, Slingshot. Paul, how are you doing today?
Really well, thanks, Trey.
Awesome. Now, Paul, I've seen that you have, most of your career has been made up with directing television, including episodic TV, live events, as well as theater and stage direction, or being a director for theater and stage. So my first question is just really, how did you get involved with a project like Slingshot in the first place, which is a documentary about inventor Dean Kamen and his water distillation device, the Slingshot?
Well, I've been making a lot of short documentaries with Dean over the last 20 years about his Segway device, which was called Ginger at the time, and primarily his robotics competition, which is called FIRST, which stands for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology. So we had done a lot of small projects together over the last two decades, and he told me in about 2006 that he was working on the world's water crisis, and I thought this is possibly going to be the biggest invention and cause he's ever tackled. And I suggested to him, I said, you know, we always cover these things after you're finished. What would it be like to actually get you on camera while you're developing the technology and actually potentially show an audience what it's like to have an idea like this and take it from the beginning of an idea, which actually wasn't true because he'd already been working on it for years, but, you know, somewhat early on in the process to the reality of creating the device and getting it disseminated. And he embraced the notion, so we literally have been working on this for 7+ years.
So the intent was always to pursue kind of whatever the project presented, because I did see that Slingshot started, at least Slingshot the film, started as a short. And so you were just committed, because of your relationship with Dean, to kind of just follow this to wherever it led?
Yeah, it's a common misperception, and one that's very understandable, that the short precedes the feature, and it's actually the opposite. The short, which we did about 2 years ago for a competition, was an outgrowth of the feature. It's the other way around. We have been involved with making the long-form movie when an assistant of mine walked in the door and said, are you aware of this competition called Focus Forward Films? And it was such a large cash prize that we felt we had to enter really to help fund the movie. And so it's actually the opposite. The short grew out of the feature, not the other way around. So I don't know if that helps put a perspective on it, but the 3-minute movie, which we frankly won a very nice prize for and entered a competition from 69 countries, was actually a small outgrowth of the feature, not the other way around.
No, that makes total sense, that you were already working on the feature, saw an opportunity, did basically a short, you know, a short almost like demo, or what would you call it, almost like a promo of the feature?
Well, it's interesting because the competition was so specific. It literally said, make a 3-minute movie about an inventor, their invention, and its potential impact on the world. That was the challenge. And we thought, wow, we are doing just that, but we've never conceived of cutting it down to 3 minutes. And frankly, it was quite a task because the 3-minute form is just not embracing of what we were trying to do in the movie. So we ended up doing a very, very quick study of introducing Dean Kamen, introducing the machine, the Slingshot, and talking about really how it went to Ghana and transformed the lives of students in 5 rural schools. So that became the 3-minute. The feature is really, really different. The feature is really trying to be a complete character study of this very complex and interesting man and track the development of this one really important technology that he's developed.
Well, having seen the feature, your description of this contest, it's almost like they just wrote to you and said, hey, exactly what you're doing. We want that.
Yeah, that was because when my assistant Josh came in and told me about the competition, which he learned about, I thought, oh my God, that's what we're doing. We just have to figure out how to get it down to 3 minutes, which, by the way, was a pretty daunting task because we had been thinking of the material in long form, not short form. So it took something to, we basically dropped what we were doing for 2 weeks and made this 3 minute movie.
Wow.
Then the nice thing is that the 3 minute movie does serve as a kind of nice calling card for the feature. And it's a very quick way to, most people will watch something for 3 minutes. They're not so committed to watching 90 minutes. So it became not a trailer, not a demo, but it became a way to introduce people to the subject.
Sure, sure. How did you first, because Dean Kamen is such a compelling, fascinating character just unto himself. How did you first come into contact with him? Because you said that you've had, you know, a relationship with him for 20-some years, having worked on First and having done things with him with Ginger, pieces about Ginger,
yeah.
And then the segue, or which became the segue. How did you meet him? How did you first kind of come into contact with Dean Kamen?
It's a nice story. My father in the 80s was working for a company called Baxter Travanol, and they were particularly involved with artificial organs and medical devices. And Dean at the time was working on his concept of kidney dialysis. So he was working very much with his company. And the one guy that he really liked his company happened to be my father. And I coincidentally was directing a play in the area that Dean lived in Milford, New Hampshire. And I think the way the story goes is my father invited Dean and his family to the opening night of that play, and that's the night Dean and I met. And we have really been friends ever since. And he asked me on that night if I could help him build a theater in his town of Manchester, New Hampshire. And I said, well, what do you have in mind? He said, well, why don't you come up next weekend? And I thought, I lived in New York at the time, and I thought, okay. And he was quite willing to help me with the expenses. And he said, just come up to Boston and I'll pick you up. And that's how it was arranged. And I flew into Boston on the shuttle. There was a standard shuttle from LaGuardia to Boston. And he did pick me up in his helicopter. And I had never been in a helicopter. And he made great fun of, flying up and down and making me feel like I was going to lose everything. But that was my first exposure to Dean, and over the year we worked on this theater together, and literally that was the start of our relationship.
Well, that's a pretty incredible story. And in watching this film, it really, Dean Kamen comes across as just an incredibly compelling person, tenacious, passionate, kind of intimidating, I would say. But just his sort of passion for, kind of where he started, which was in medical devices, and then seeing even the slingshot, this distillation machine that he has made, that really could, I guess, revolutionize the world's water problems. But just the fact that he is so kind of almost aggressively matter-of-fact about it, that this is kind of a duh issue, just a really fascinating person. What has it been like working with him? Is he at times overwhelming? I mean, because it just seems like he seems super excited, and I watched this, and I thought, man, I want to be a part of this. But then at the same time, I was like, man, I feel like on the wrong day, this guy could swallow me whole. He's just so passionate about this stuff.
Yeah, well, your comments are very apt. I mean, Dean is all those things. And but the thing that I really admire about him is he's also funny, and he's also he's idiosyncratic, in major ways and eccentric in major ways. But he's really funny, and a lot of the enjoyment of making the film is when Dean will surprise you with humor. He's possibly one of the most articulate and intimidating people I've ever dealt with in my entire life. And so, yes, he is very much intimidating at times. But You know, I found that the dean really appreciates honesty and appreciates passion back at him. And so you kind of got to match him and try to stay in the room.
Your mention of humor, one of the things that kind of caught me off guard, and maybe this says more about my sense of humor than anything else, but when they have kind of their first success and it looks like they're going to be able to distribute more of these machines globally, and Dean is in the room and he kind of raises his beer in a toast to all of the people that have worked with him, and it seems to be a rare gesture of congratulations coming from this man that is just so driven. But he says to one of his lead developers or lead engineers, I couldn't quite, you know, one of the people on the team, and says, "Now don't screw this up." And I just found that hilarious. I just thought that was the funniest thing ever. And the room kind of falls silent because, you know, again, he seems pretty intimidating. But I thought it was hilarious. I don't know.
No, it is hilarious, and that's absolutely typical of Dean. A moment like that where it seems like what he's doing is threatening, and then he turns it into humor. And the guy you're talking about is Jim Scott, and Jim has been one of the head engineers. Business people on the Slingshot since I've been involved. He's a terrific, terrific guy. And Jim also was in Ghana. You see him in some of the Ghana footage, you know, on the ground, you know, setting up these machines for the five schools. I call that the beer pizza party. It is absolutely one of the rare occasions when Dean takes a moment to either congratulate or say, well done. He's mostly about keeping going. He's mostly about never taking a day off or a moment to even pause. He's not kidding when he says, most of you know me, and I don't like sleeping on the bearskin rug before you know you shot the bear. That's very, very typical of Dean. And also, even more typical of Dean is the moment he has success in anything, he's already on to the next thing. So I think one of the great moments of that party, quote-unquote, is that as the camera looks around, you see a lot of terror-stricken guys, because it's not really a celebration. It's really about more work. What he's really saying is, great, we got 50 machines and they're in Ghana working, so now we're going to make 50. And those guys in that room know that making 50 is a really hard, big deal, and they're all sort of swallowing and lowering their eyes. And what's always been a kind of pleasure for me is this quote-unquote party is anything but a celebration. It looks like a... And then Sky Stewart, who actually doesn't work on Slingshot, he works on the Luke arm, says, hey, how come you guys are all scared? Shouldn't you be excited and happy? And the whole party giggles and laughs. And then Dean says, Stewart, these guys are way too smart not to be scared.
Yeah, I thought that was a great line.
That's Decca.
Yeah.
And that's Dean.
Man, it's got to be, if you're capable of working there, it has to be one of the most fascinating, incredible places to work, and also at the same time, one of the most terrifying places to be.
I think it's both, and these guys that work there, they are, you know, the best of the best. I mean, he attracts a very rare and special kind of engineer to his staff, and he grills them before they get in, and it's a very rare breed. And most of those guys are there because they believe in the task. You know, I mean, I think everybody who surrounds Dean for a long time, you're only there because you want to solve the world's water crisis. You're not there because you're looking for an engineering job with a high pay and a comfortable position. You're there because you believe in the cause. I think that, you know, that's similar to us in the movie. I've got a lot of lovely, dedicated people who've struggled with me for close to 7 years on this thing, and nobody's in it for kind of normal movie stuff. Everybody's in it because they hope it, in a small way, could help contribute to getting clean water to people.
And it's interesting that you bring up the sort of parallels between Dean's passion and your passion and your crew's passion for the documentary. You get some pretty remarkable footage and in this where not everything goes according to plan. In fact, you know, within this person's kind of world of invention and creation and implementation, almost every step is beset with setbacks. And so I just remember seeing moments where the team would have some sort of incredible victory, and then they'd have this setback of implementation or distribution, and you'd see Dean kind of reflect in that moment. I would say it was somber, you know, somber, not defeated. But it's interesting. Do you think it's because of the parallel in your passion for the documentary and your crew's passion for the documentary that has gained you that level of access over the years?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any project that I've ever taken on more in my life that I've wanted to stop doing and give up more often. I mean, it is, I'm not kidding when I say it's 7 years, and all along the way we were beset by so many challenges, and it is parallel to the development of the technology itself in a strange way, but the thing that keeps you going is that you go to Ghana and you know, third or fourth day in Ghana, a camera breaks and you only have two, and you know, you just wonder, how the heck did you ever get to Ghana with one broken camera? But then you come back and you hear that the footage that you got of kids drinking water has not only had impact on DECA, but it's been shown to the people of Coca-Cola and had impact on them. And you realize that if we hadn't gone to Ghana, nobody would have seen those images, especially not the kind of the way we shot them, you know, with full power. And you find that you're starting to actually affect the story you're telling. So we're both looking at it and inside it at the same time, which is unlike anything I've ever been involved with.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, it's thinking about this documentary, it really does take on the level of activism within the piece itself.
I hope so. I mean, I don't think that sounds a little grandiose, and I shudder to embrace it, but It, on some level, this is like filming a technology in its embryonic baby steps. It's hard to explain how early in the life of this technology we are in. But if you could picture a cell phone being that huge brick that first appeared when people had cell phones, that's kind of where the slingshot is. It's just beginning. There's only 50 of them on the planet, and it could turn into something where there's tens of thousands of units within a couple of years affecting millions of people. And so it's very exciting, and it is very active, proactive, and we hope that we're in some ways leading to the good that it can do.
So the structure of the film itself, it starts off by really focusing in on Dean. Then we get the invention of, and we've got some of his other inventions from his insulin pump to the dialysis machine to the Segway. But then it really focuses in and zeroes in on the slingshot. And then finally it moves to this sort of, I've been referring to it as kind of this culture of ignorance that mainly dominates the Western world and allows many sort of South American, African, Asian countries to go without, large populations to go without potable water.
Right.
After making this film, and it ends on a kind of not a skeptical note, but sort of speculative, can we? But after making this film, I know that you have seen, because of your role and as writer and director of the film and being integral to the entire process, after making this film, can this culture of denial that even affects the quality of drinking water in the United States. And that's, I thought that part was incredible, that you even talk about, that Dean even talks about the quality of water, and that you were able to get that in so seamlessly in the U.S. Because the discovery is that this is a cultural issue more than a technology issue. Can that change?
My answer to that at this point is it will have to change, and I, you know, when and how it will change remains to be seen. But there's no question for me anymore that it's not can it change, it's how will it change, because we're not really faced with many options. We're going to learn very quickly, maybe within even a decade, that our taking for granted and our denial of water as a resource in the world, and how we very much, particularly in the Western developed world, take it for granted, we're going to learn that that's not feasible. And we're going to learn it either by the cost going so far up of potable water that we'll learn it that way, or we'll learn it by stress and just appreciation of how serious the threats are around us. We'll learn it either way, and then we'll have to adopt a whole different way of thinking about water, and we'll all be like following in the good path of Singapore, where we realize that we've been throwing away potable water and we have to recycle it. So that, you know, Singapore basically is as a city, every drop of water goes to a refurbishing remediation plant and back to you. It's just one big cycle. So there's no wasted water. It's not, you don't flush your potable toilet. You don't flush your toilet with potable water and it goes out to the ocean. It goes into the plant, gets clean, it comes back as your drinking water. And we're all going to learn very quickly that we have to do that. But there's no real option. And so once we start to figure that out, I hope that we figure out first that a lot of people don't have access to water and need it. And that we could help the world because we have the technology and the ability, as Dean says, because we have the ability to do that, we should be helping the rest of the world catch up to our take on water. And then we are going to have to learn to have a whole new attitude about it. But I don't think it's can we anymore. I think it's when and how will we. Because I just don't think it's even possible. It's like every other resource. Once you start to actually run out, you have to fix your whole way of thinking about it.
Well, it's an incredible film, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me. I just can't encourage people enough to go and see Slingshot. And thank you very much, Paul.
Oh, my pleasure, and thanks for taking the time.
All right, take care.